You're an ice cream cone. You're a lollipop. You're a baby chick. You're a pogo stick. You're a magic trick. You're a spinning top. You're special.
Well, Happy New Year. It is 2013, and we're ringing in the new year with, I believe, episode 19 of our podcast here with the Neighborhood Archive. And I'm very pleased to have a special guest with us today to help us ring in the new year. It's our fifth year of the Neighborhood Archive. And with me today, he is an accomplished musician. He is currently the pastor of Bread of Life Assembly of God in Bowville, New York. And those of you who are familiar with the Neighborhood program likely remember him as Mr. Allmine from the mid-70s, a handful of episodes then. So I am very, very pleased to have with us today Pastor Bert Lloyd.
Oh, and I'm happy to be here, Tim.
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's what we'd like to do is I'd really just like to get a feel for your neighborhood experience, for lack of a better description, to talk with you about the character you played, how you got involved with the neighborhood in the first place, maybe a couple of memories you have about your experience, maybe a little about working with the people on the show, how that process went, and then, of course, a little about what you've done since the Mr. Allmine days in the 25, 30 years since then, right?
Yes, it's been a while.
It has been. So,
as far as my beginnings on the show, I was, if you remember Chef Brockett, obviously you do. And he was sort of my boss. He did productions in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and that's where the show was obviously recorded. And he was a producer of cabaret shows and what they call industrial shows. We would, and I was part of his troupe. We would go something like Stouffer Foods or Pittsburgh Plate Glass, and we were ended up going all over the world. We were in Spain doing shows for Stouffer Food. They would take their executives to Spain or some other place, California, and they would present a new product, and Chef Brockett, or Don Brockett, that's his name, sure. He would produce a show. So it usually was Don Brockett and a troupe of young people, and Barbara Russell was his partner, and they did a stand-up comedy act also. But we would go out on these industrial shows, and we would present these to the different companies, and we would be the comic relief or the musical relief. After they sat in a boring meeting looking at a new product, we would come out and sing about the product or sing about something else, and then do the show for them. But I was with Don Brockett, and he produced shows in Pittsburgh, stage shows. In fact, one of the shows he produced, Sweet Feet, and we ended up going to New York off-Broadway in that show. And it was I think they've torn this theater down since then, but it was called the New Theater over on the east side, an off-Broadway show. But Don Brockett also produced he had a desire to do television, so his own show. So he produced a show called The Nobodies, meaning that nobody really knew them. And I was on that show, The Nobodies, the pilot of that. And I sang and did different skits and the presentations, almost like a laugh-in type thing. And being that he was also on the Mr. Rogers show, Mr. Rogers saw the show, reviewed it for him to give his critique on it. And he saw me on the show. And he thought I had potential as a television artist. Mm-hmm. And so he called me, and that's how I got on the show, through that television pilot that was produced by Don Brockett.
Okay, so we're talking entrance in. We're talking what, early 70s at this point?
That was, I had gone to a school in Pittsburgh, Robert Morris College, and I had graduated in the 70s with a bachelor's degree in business administration, of all things. Mm-hmm. But that summer that I graduated, I auditioned for a show that would be playing in Hershey, Pennsylvania, a cabaret show, and Don Brockett, again, was the producer there. That's when I first met him. And for two different years, I went to Hershey in that show, and then during the regular months, not the summer months, we did the industrial shows. And so, yeah, that was in the early 70s, and that was my step into show business. I went right from college into show business. So it's it was an interesting leap, and I had a lot to learn. But that was a good environment. Pittsburgh was a good environment for me to learn in. It was wasn't like the huge big time, but it was a place to really get into theater, both cabaret and stage performing with book shows and things like that, and of course television with the Mr. Rogers. And yes, that was in the early 70s.
Okay, now if you would tell me a little more about the Nobodies. Was this a local production?
It was a local production.
Okay,
and. QED, WQED, the public broadcasting station, which Mr. Rogers appeared on, Mr. Rogers' show, had, you know, workers there that were very competent, obviously, in television production. And so Don Brockett got to know them and had so many contacts. And you had mentioned prior to the show here just now, Audrey Roth, and many others in Pittsburgh that were good performers, excellent performers. Mm-hmm. And so he wanted to give them a venue to be able to perform and to display their talents. And the Nobodies was it. That it was a pilot product, but it didn't go anywhere,
sure.
Unfortunately.
So who else would have appeared on there? You know, you've mentioned Audrey Roth. You mentioned Barbara Russell earlier, Don Brockett,
yes.
Yourself. Anybody else from the show, from the Mr. Rogers program
well,
that would have been on
there? A couple young people that... I don't know if they were on the show. Marty Goetz, who was my partner for a while, we sang together in the Catskills, but he later on is very successful as a Christian artist. He calls himself a completed Jew because he's a Christian. But he is he's traveled with Debbie Boone as her accompanist, and then he graduated from Carnegie Mellon as a songwriter, musician, and he's written some phenomenal music and songs, and he is going across the world now performing in different Christian organizations. And but he was on the show. In fact, he played, he was in a costume, and I forget if he was like a bear or a tiger, one of the, but he never saw his face, although you would see the credits of running the show. He was on the Nobodies. Another girl that was on the Nobodies ended up going to New York and starring in some Broadway shows. Florence Lacey was on the show, and I'm trying to think a couple other people that just slipping my mind. I'm not thinking of their names right now, but yeah, quite a few of the young people that were there ended up going into coming up to New York to perform up here. Lenore Nemitz, that's the name, was in my mind. She ended up starring in the Broadway show Chicago and all that jazz. She was an excellent performer, dancer, singer, actor. She was on the show. I think they all did like little spots. That's what Mr. Rogers was very conscious of, the showbiz family in Pittsburgh. And so everybody was going on doing something or other. If it just was a day in the neighborhood, they may not have been regulars, but they went on for a day in the neighborhood, as I remember that.
Well, speaking of which, let's talk a little about your character, Mr. Allmine. If you would, I know he's somewhat of an obscure character on the show, as there were only, maybe a dozen appearances, roughly?
There was a week's worth of the introduction of Mr. Allmine. He was supposed to have had his own land and ended up thinking that everything that was in his book was all his, or it being me, all mine. And so whenever he saw something in his book, it became all his. So he found that clocks were in his book, and so he came and he stole Daniel Striped Tiger's clock. Well, actually, I didn't feel like I was stealing it as Mr. Allmine. It was certainly mine because it was in my book. And so I took Daniel Striped Tiger's clock and that and took it back to my own land and the museum I had there. And so they came looking for it Yoshi Ito, I think, came with one of the other members of the cast to look for the clock. Joe Negri, who was a great guitarist, mm-hmm. and he also played on. They came looking for the clock, and they found me, and they brought me back, and asked me to come to see the King and Lady Elaine, and so Lady Elaine sort of did some psychological analysis of me, and Mr. Allmine saying, "Well, in my book, everything that grows is mine, so your hair is mine." I said, "Well, you can't have my hair. That's my hair." She said, "Well, that's the same way that Daniel Striped Tiger needs his clock." So I was reformed, mm-hmm. born again, so to speak, on the words of Lady Elaine, and I gave back the clock, and then I became a decent citizen. And well, actually, I should be a decent citizen. I went back to my own land and was my own king in my own land, mm-hmm. but I no longer really took people's things. I just showed the things that I had. And I think maybe that after that, they revisited that land once in a while, just if they needed something. Mm-hmm. I always was like a eclectic, and I had a lot of things that they may have needed in the neighborhood. So they would come to me asking for things, and I gave those.
Well, I've got a few clips from those episodes that you were reformed, where you still had lots of stuff. And I remember one of those clips now. For those listening, the only episode that is currently covered on the website that Mr. Allmine appears in is the opera. And we'll get to the opera here in just a minute. But just if anybody listening is looking for information on these episodes that we're talking about, those aren't yet covered on the archive site. But I remember watching a couple of these clips, and one of the lines in there really stood out to me. I thought it was interesting that it was, you know, it seemed, you know, just another one of the many... many great comments or statements written by Fred Rogers, where he said, I believe it was after you were reformed, you know, so to speak, and you were talking with Daniel Striped Tiger, and he was concerned you were going to take his clock again. Mm-hmm. And when you said, "Oh no, I've changed," he said, "But your name is still Mr. Allmine," and the response from your character was something along the lines of, "Well, people can change, but their names still stay the same." And I thought that was great, just because, you know, that's the way it is in real life. And I thought that was just very well written, you know, that people can change, although their names don't change. And so I thought
exactly
that was very
right.
Fascinating.
He had so many good phrases and thoughts that he came up with. He was a very good man, mm-hmm. Mr. Rogers. He wasn't just an actor on television. He lived his life of integrity. Mm-hmm. And he was a very gentle man, and some of the great thoughts I have remembering him, he and his wife invited me over to dinner at his house, and he had two boys, and we had a great time, just casual conversation, and I think at that time we were preparing for the opera, and so I think Francois Clemens was there, and John Reardon, and Yoshi Ito, and I think the Brockets were there. But I remember going into his house in Squirrel Hill, and the first thing you noticed there, he and his wife both were accomplished pianists. She did a concert. She was a concert pianist and traveled. But they had two, in the living room, 2 9-foot grand pianos that were made to their touch in Germany and then shipped over to the United States. He was well off through his family. It wasn't through the show that he had money. They already were very well off and lived with the elite in Squirrel Hill, but not ostentatious at all. He was a very, again, simple man. But I remember we were over there that day, and I was walking through the house admiring some of the things, and there was a picture on the wall, and it was from a psalm, a quote said, "I shall look unto the hills from whence cometh my help." And it was a picture of a sketch of a woman looking to the hills. And I said, "What a beautiful picture." And at the end of the evening, as we were leaving, he had wrapped up in a gift wrapping, that picture, took it off the wall, wrapped it up and gave it to me and said, here, I want you to have this.
Wow.
And he was just a giving man.
Do you still have that picture?
Pardon me?
Do you still have that picture?
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Do
I was some other good thoughts about Fred Rogers when I was going on for my first performance in the show, and I forget exactly when that was, because I think before the opera, mm-hmm. he had me on a couple times just as myself, Burt Lloyd, and but I remember the first day I went in, he came back to the area where we were all getting ready, and everybody was in the room, but he especially came over to me, and he sat down. And just he began to just speak to me very gently and very softly. And so, how are you feeling today? And we're so happy to have you to come on the show. And he I knew what he was doing. He was trying to set me at ease. Mm-hmm. And he did. He was he had a very soothing way about him. And he was very insightful into the pressures of first time in anything. So this was my first time performance on his television show, and he wanted me to be at ease.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's he came over and just gently spoke to me. And I thought that I always remembered that he took that time. And I many of the things that he has had developed in his character, I saw to be such good character traits.
Mm-hmm.
He was ordained as a Presbyterian minister. And I don't know where I saw this, but his family was very surprised when he said, I'm not going to really continue in the seminary. I'm going to go into television. And they were like taken aback when he said that. But certainly he had a phenomenal ministry to a multitude, on television, where he may have not quite had that effect in a smaller parish, as a pastor. So, yes, what a fine man he was.
Well, he took his message and sent it to a worldwide audience versus just within one church community. It's
certainly
he
did.
Definitely took
he
that worldwide.
Did.
So, well, you mentioned the opera, the Key to Other Land was the opera that you appeared in.
Yes,
as kind of a lead in to talking a little bit about that. I know you mentioned being over at the Rogers home with Francois Clemens and the Brockets and Yoshi Ito. What was it like working with some of these other names? John Reardon. These were some very talented people as well. What were they like?
Well, I think that they either themselves were very gentle people, or else they responded to Fred Rogers' laid-back style. I remember on the show we had gone through about five or six takes of the same two lines or something, and it seemed like every time we went to do a new take, something went wrong, like the camera wasn't focused right, or somebody forgot their line, or something fell over. And after about the five, six times, the director was about to throw something across the room, and Fred Rogers just very gently said, okay, let's just try it again. And he said, don't know if I can even express it the way he said that, but mm-hmm. it was like everybody was starting to get agitated. And when he spoke, it was like the calming of the sea. It was like, peace, be still. And everybody said, oh, okay. So everybody walked over, and we did the next take, and joyfully it came out, and there were no glitches. But I think he brought that personality and that calming aura of his to everyone. So to work with John Reardon, who was and Yoshi Ito, who were both stars in the Met, was exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
But they were just as calm as can be, as professional. I remember speaking with John Reardon on the show one day, and I said, "Well, how long does it take you to memorize an opera?" He said, "It takes as long as they give me." So, meaning that if I had to do it quick, I'd put more time into it. If I had time, I'd take. So he was very willing to share his experiences as a professional singer. Yoshi Ito, I didn't spend so much time with her, but we did speak back and forth. Francois Clemens. Again, he was a fine young man at that time, and a very fine singer. They both were all very fine singers, and it was nice to be a part of that a troupe for the other land. Lady and Betty Aberlin, she was a fine young lady too. That she also worked with Don Brockett doing industrial shows. These things are coming back to me as I'm rehearsing this in my mind. But yes, to work with those people was educational, was inspiring. I enjoyed it very much. Great time.
Well, in the opera you played, I think the character was called Brother Lloyd in the opera, where you were the brother of Lady Aberlin's character. And you know, the description or the details of the plot of the opera can be found on the website. But I guess my question to you would be, what did you prefer? What did you enjoy more, I suppose, would be a better way to word that, the opera that you did or the character of Mr. Allmine?
Wow, that's an interesting question.
Or are they so very different that it could be a little of both?
Well, it was all fun. I enjoyed the Allmine character. Because to me, he was very funny, you know, to be so presumptuous and thinking he could take everything. But I'm a singer. I was brought up as a singer before I ever did acting. And as I look back at some of the episodes, I said I could have done that much better as far as the acting aspect. But the singing I enjoyed, and I remember Fred Rogers had never really heard me sing. On a stage outside of the studio. He had just had Johnny Costa sat down one day and had me sing through a few bars of a thing. And I said, oh, well, he can sing, so I'll give him. And he said after, when he came to see me perform, we were doing a show, a running show of Broadway tunes and popular tunes at a local restaurant. Marty Goetz was playing for me and singing with me. And he came to the show with the group, and he said, I'm so sorry that I hadn't heard you sing before. I would have given you extended the range of the song so much more and given you more to do in that the singing aspect of that. But I, as far as what I enjoyed more, I love to sing, and but the combination of the two in the opera was that was nice. It was almost the best of both worlds, acting a little, singing a little, and you know, living in that that storyline. So I had a good time with that.
I guess the two other things, one of the other two things I did want to talk with you about is something I try to ask everyone that I talk with, is what is one thing, I know this is kind of a very broad question, but what is one thing that you took away from your experience with with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood? You know, whether that was a life lesson of some sort, whether that was just the experience itself. If you had to look back and pinpoint something that gave to you, what would it be?
Well, that a person can live out their faith in many venues, and seeing Mr. Rogers in that capacity as a television actor, he brought his faith to that, to the table with that. At that time, I was a new Christian, and I walked around with my Bible almost obnoxiously. Every place I went, I was carrying that Bible. Not as a holier-than-thou person. I just wanted to understand more about Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And so I was there, and Mr. Rogers knew that I carried that Bible everywhere. And he never once mocked that. He enjoyed that very much, that I was pursuing my faith in that way. And in fact, he told me something very interesting, that he had gotten the language for the two swans. And I said, I'm a Pentecostal minister, and we believe in this may be, I don't know if you can put this in your program, but we believe in a thing called speaking in tongues. Mm-hmm. And it's what the world might term that as glossolalia. Mm-hmm. And so I was there saying, what a unique language they're speaking. And Mr. Rogers looked at me and he said, why, my young man, he said, that is pure glossolalia, meaning that he thought of that as a spiritual song that he had written for those two swans on that beach, that other land, when mm-hmm. we went for the opera. So Mr. Rogers brought his spirituality into everything he did. Many people didn't know that at all about him. He never, shoved his faith in anybody's face, mm-hmm. but he lived it, and it was expressed in everything that he did ever so subtly, mm-hmm. and without people even knowing that, that his personality was so gentle and Christ-like. It was what I took from the show was that you can live out your faith without being aggressive or obnoxious by just living it. That's mm-hmm. probably one of the key things I learned.
Well, speaking of living out your faith, let's talk about you. Let's talk about the years since Mr. Allmine. I've seen from your website just the pastor of a very successful church. And so I know there's a lot in between that and the Mr. Allmine days. So let's talk a little about, I'd like to hear what you've done since that time. You know, I know you've traveled as a musician. You spent some time, you know, in show business and then found your way to Bread of Life where you are now. So if you would tell us a little bit about what you've done since Mr. Allmine.
Sure. Well, when I was filming Mr. Mr. Rogers show, I was still living in Pittsburgh, and this was probably 1974 or so, or five. And in that time, I had an opportunity to go to New York with, as I said before, the Don Brockett production of Sweet Feet, this off-Broadway show. And we went up to New York, and it was I was a small-town kid into a big town. But as I said, I had originally come from Altoona, Pennsylvania, which is a very small town, over to Pittsburgh for college, so I got a taste of a larger town, and then up to New York. And so in the midst of, while I was still filming the Mr. Rogers show, I had moved to New York. And so when I would go back and forth to the Mr. Rogers show, they were great because they paid plane fare back and forth and paid me for doing the show, which I guess a lot of the performers, because John Reardon was in New York and California, lived, and Yoshi Ito and Francois Clemens, I think he later went to New York. A lot of the performers lived in New York. So I went up to New York and for that show. Then we came back to Pittsburgh, and I was performing. But then I still had that taste of New York in my mind, and one day we just decided, Marty Goetz and I, we're going to go up and try and to do something in New York. And so we went to New York, and I had a list of about five, six different names of people to contact, and we were doing a cabaret act at that time. Marty was an excellent pianist and a fine singer also. So we finally hooked up with an agent, a woman that booked entertainment into some of the Catskill mountain hotels. If not everybody knows what that was, they used to call that the Borscht Belt, because it was a lot of Jewish people went to the hotels in the Catskills, Grossinger's, Kutcher's, the Concord, some of the larger hotels up there, which are now not running the way they did some 30, 40 years ago. But we came up, and it was an amazing thing. We just seemed to hit it just right, and the audiences took to us, and immediately we began to perform, and so I stayed in New York. Marty, being a singer-songwriter, he wanted to go off and pursue that aspect, and so I went out as a solo artist, and for some years I performed in the Catskills, and we used to call that the Jewish Alps, and then we went over to the Pocono Mountains, which was primarily an Italian resort, and so I was singing Italian songs over there, and the Jewish songs on the other side. And doing some cruise ships and continuing to perform across the country in concerts and such. At that time, I was growing deeper in my faith, and I was attending a church in New York City. called Rock Church, not rock and roll, but Christ the Solid Rock Church. And I met a young lady, Lillian, who would 5 years later be my wife. I had, and in that interim of being in New York, I also went to California and was pursuing a musical career there also, and looking for some kind of opening in television or movies out there. But my heart was still in New York, and so I moved back, and Lily and I were married at Rock Church in 1980. And I continued to perform till into the years of 2000s. I was still performing in concerts and cruises and wherever the opportunity presented itself. I have had an agent for doing that, booking me for those years. She's since passed away, Sandy Merle, but it was a very good agent relationship that I had with her. Lillian and I eventually moved to from New York City to the Catskill Mountain area, and in 1993 I had been doing singing not only now in secular music, but then I began to sing in concerts in churches across the country. And so in 1993, I felt a calling on my life, and I began a church. And the church was 9 people in our living room. Mm-hmm. And every Sunday, we would have service there. And on Fridays, we ended up having, like, a youth group and some younger groups of young people, which are... we had two boys, Eric and Michael. Eric born in 1985 and Michael born in 1988. And so we started the church, as I said, with 9 people. And in 1999, we had purchased a piece of property, 72 acres, and we built the first section of the church. And in the years since then, in the last 12 years, we have made three additions to the church, and it has grown since. My boys now, my eldest son is graduated from NIAC College, and he's married, no children yet. They've been married a year, but he is studying now at Liberty University, for a course of a master's in theology. And my youngest son is graduated from Purchase Conservatory of Music, and he is attending classes at Juilliard as a composer. He would like to do film scoring, and he also is a singer-songwriter. Both my boys are singers. So that is some of the things that have happened both professionally. I don't sing professionally anymore, but every year we're having our a theatrical performance at the church. We have a church play, which my wife is a writer, and she writes the play, and she lets me sing in it. So we do that every year. We put on a play at the church, and that's about the only place that I'm performing at this point. So that's where the career has taken me, and it's been a joyous time, and now I'm singing primarily in a church, and I would say for the Lord, not that I am ever embarrassed about having performed secularly, because I had a good solid foundation, and also remembering back to Mr. Rogers, as I said, you can live your faith out in many venues, and so that's what I had done through my professional singing career, and continue to do now.
Yeah. You know, people a lot of times think of the story of, you know, Fred Rogers and his career and his life. And I'm fascinated when I speak with people who, you know, were a part of the neighborhood experience. And I hear the stories of their careers and their lives, because I think very seriously, I think all of these other stories that aren't focused on as much are just as equally inspiring, you know, to think that, you know, to see where you've come from and see where you are now, to me is just equally inspiring. I think it's a very, very inspirational story.
Yes. Thank you for saying that. And, you know, we've often speak about building on the shoulders of giants. Certainly mm-hmm. some of the people that have led me in a direction have taught me lessons. I've always learned some good lessons from those that I've performed with and those that I've seen in show business. You can learn a lot from those that do good and a lot from those that haven't done so well as far as their character development. But you say this, but again, back to Fred Rogers, he's a man that you can certainly emulate and always hold him in high esteem, he and his family.
Well, I appreciate hearing your story. Just, you know, like I said, it's inspirational in and of itself. You know, I like, you know, touching base with people that were part of the neighborhood and finding out where life has taken them. And, you know, and like I said, I find that that their own stories are equally inspirational and equally powerful. I do want to thank you so much for just taking some time to share some thoughts. I'm sure you've got many, many more experiences and thoughts that you could share.
Well, I certainly appreciate the opportunity. This has been a good time to reminisce.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great to hear the stories that usually go untold. You know, the background stories. You know, to the program we grew up with, and it's just very fascinating. And I appreciate your time.
And I appreciate the opportunity, Jim.
Well, for those listening, feel free to check back in. I'm hoping that in the very near future, episode 20 will be available, and we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. In the meantime, feel free to check back as the Neighborhood Archive is updated mostly on a daily basis with new information on episodes, memorabilia, and so on. So feel free to visit on a regular basis.